Yeah, I'm already in.
The House Committee on Energy, Environment, and Water will come to order. Colleagues, we have but one issue on the agenda today, Senate Bill 1510. So I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1510. Beth?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1510 would direct ODF&W, the State Fish and Wildlife Commission, and the State Land Board to implement the January 25th, 2011 recommendations on marine reserve boundaries and allowances. It would have them establish, study, monitor, and evaluate marine reserves, a marine reserve in two marine protected areas at Cape Falcon, a marine reserve in three protected areas at Cascade Head, and a marine reserve two protected areas in a seabird protection area at Cape Perpetua. There is no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And we are joined by two of our colleagues, Senator Johnson and Co-Speaker Roblin.
It's your ballpark. You get to bat first.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Arnie Roblin, House District 9, Coos Bay to Florence. It is really a pleasure to be here, and I think we're speaking for the Coastal Caucus as well, but we have had a process going on for about a decade on the Oregon coast, having conversations, sometimes pleasant, sometimes not so pleasant, regarding marine reserves and the idea of whether we need them and don't need them and so on and so forth. And from the Coastal Caucus perspective, the last two sessions, we have worked very hard with coastal communities to try to come up with a procedure to let Oregonians on the coast and others from around the state have conversations about the need and where we should put marine reserves. Last session, we almost killed our chair of the Coastal Caucus, Representative Cowan, as we went through one thing after another trying to figure out if we could get to a place where a bill that people could work on. And during the interim between that session and today, two of our members of the Coast Caucus stepped forward and said that they were going to go and work and talk and kind of figure out if they could get to the essence of what we have been discussing over those years. And so Senator Johnson and Senator Cruz spent an enormous amount of time and energy talking to lots of people and came to the Coastal Caucus and said, we think we have a plan that will move forward and let us do the things that we need to do. And from my perspective, I just want to say that I have always felt that the idea of having control groups, this is my science background, my oceanography background. When I first went to the University of Washington, I did so as a thinking I was going to be a marine biologist. Your co-vice chair, Representative Bruin, was there about the same time in the same field, which was kind of interesting. But the idea of understanding our ocean, and especially that that 3 miles that the state of Oregon has control over, and really understanding it, means you have to have research. And in order to do research, you need to have baseline data, and then you have to have control groups, and then you need to see what happens over a period of time. And from my perspective, reserves have been that. And finding the place where they have the least economic harm, and that's what was said from the governor when he got involved in this and said, you know, we want to move forward, but we also want to take into consideration the natural and the regular uses of that ocean. What we came up with were these five reserves, with an understanding that before we could do any implementation of the no-take zones in those reserves, that we would do the baseline research to know what's there now. We started that research. Representative Krieger and I were at an event down in Port Orford this last week that highlights one of the first reserves that is actually moving forward and some materials and work that has been done to make sure that when researchers come, there's a place for them to stay and some other work. But this is to say, let's take care of the next three and the last three that OPAC has approved, that local community groups have talked about and worked through. They include not only the reserve part, but some other areas of restrictions. Let's take what those community groups have brought forward to us and then move forward, do the research, The money is there for our Fish and Wildlife to do that research, and then let's see what happens over the next few years. I'm excited about it. I commend Senator Johnson and Senator Cruz for the work they did to bring this bill to where we are right now. So with that, Senator Johnson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Co-Chairs. For the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I represent Northwest Oregon, Senate District 16. It's a pleasure to be here with the co-speaker representing the Coastal Caucuses bill. And as the co-speaker said, Senate Bill 1510 is a bipartisan, bicameral bill. This has been a difficult bill for me personally because I disagree philosophically with some of my constituents about the right approach to marine reserves. Some of them are in the room. I presume that you will hear from them during the course of this hearing. I'll come back to that in just a second. Senate Bill 1510 is not a perfect piece of legislation. Some environmental and ocean advocates will say it's too little. Some fishermen and some related businesses will say it's too much. Perhaps, colleagues, in our business, this bill represents exactly the kind of compromise that the Tillamook County Commissioners called for in their February 1st, 2012 letter. This is the culmination of nearly a decade-long public planning process at OPAC, the Ocean Policy Advisory Committee, and began again in earnest in 2008 with an executive order from Governor Kulongowski. In 2009, this body passed House Bill 3013, which was sponsored by the Coastal Caucus, designated some pilot projects that were generally agreed upon in their communities, elevated the discussion to community teams, insisted that ODF&W consult with the Ocean Policy Advisory Committee, and then report back to the legislature. Senate Bill 1510 is a minimalist bill. It calls on ODF&W to develop a work plan and rules in the spring of 2012, start the research work with previously appropriated money, begin in the south establishing baselines, and move north. It calls for ODF&W to adopt rules to establish, study, monitor, evaluate, and enforce marine reserves. The marine reserves and marine protected areas defined in this bill were described by OPAC and the work of the community teams as a result of a lengthy public process ended up with physical descriptions affirmed by OPAC and now expressed in the bill. The bill also calls out a preference for local vessels and captains in the pursuit of baseline data. This is one point of mitigation for lost fishing grounds. And finally, it requires a neutral academic and scientific evaluation and a report back to the legislature in 2023. This bill is a starting point. It has other complementary activities that I hope works with the fishing community. For example, stock assessments, methods to reduce bycatch and discard mortality, among others. And finally, to come back to the differing philosophical perspective that I have with some of my constituents, there are many that believe they should resist marine reserves entirely. I absolutely believe that this bill is an inoculation against a potential ballot measure. A well-funded ballot initiative drafted someplace else, paid for by deep pockets someplace else, has the very real potential to tie up the whole coast. I have seen maps with as many as 32 marine reserves and marine protected areas described on them. Senate Bill 1510 calls for marine reserves and marine protected areas on five sites representing only 5% of the territorial sea, negotiated down from an original estimate of nearly 50% with 20 proposals. While some coastal residents object now, even though they testified in support of the bill, I believe that this bill protects the coast from economic Armageddon that could result from a ballot measure that imposes marine reserves on Oregon versus an Oregon public process that keeps this exercise to limited and generally agreed upon physical sites with appropriate sideboards to protect fragile coastal economies. I commend Senate Bill 1510 for your favorable review.
And we're here ready for questions.
Questions for this panel, colleagues. Well, we do appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedules to come.
Thank you very much.
Colleagues, I would note for you, we have only a few people signed up to testify despite a packed room, but I would reference you to the packet that you have in front of you. There is a significant number of letters that you have before you here on this issue, as well as some additional material in a separate packet. So I would urge you to read and consider each of those letters. And with that, I would like to call up Bob Horning. I apologize, I'm having a hard time with handwriting. Bernie Bjork.
Bjork.
And Kelly Barnett.
And Mr. Chair, while they're getting settled, I'd like to welcome Kelly's my constituent. Bob is not. Bob
used to be.
Used to be, and Bernie will be if things go as
think it over,
as they're.
I'm actually.
These are people from my area.
Thank you, Representative.
Welcome.
I'm actually Representative Whip's constituents now. So.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you, Co-Chair Bailey and Co-Chair Gilliam. I'm Bob Horning. I'm from Washington County. I oppose this bill because it bothers me for several reasons. It bothers me because it's not for job creation, just the opposite, actually. This bill will kill fishing jobs for our coastal communities without any mitigation such as artificial reefs or opening up other areas for fishing. It bothers me because this is not for fish enhancement. At several of the Marine Reserve stakeholders meetings, ODF&W said that this is not for fish enhancement, but to just set aside special areas for study. Ed Bowles, the Oregon Fish and Wildlife, can confirm this because he was there at all the meetings. There are currently multiple layers of Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and federal regulations that are for fishing regulation and enhancement. Now, others may claim that Marine Reserves have enhanced fish elsewhere. But these are in places that around the world with little to no fishing regulations to begin with. It bothers me that we already have two test pilot reserves that are supposed to be being studied at this point to see if there are any benefits. Yet instead of waiting for results, we are jumping ahead. It bothers me that we are doing this because those in the Coastal Caucus are convinced that if we don't do something, an outside entity will try to pass a ballot measure, locking up even more of the coast. And the Coastal Caucus is afraid that Portland will vote for it. And that's what's bothering me most, is the division of our state. To think that our state is so divided, that job-killing idea, enacted for no good reason other than it feels good, says the volume of divisions we have in the state. The people of our rural counties and countries are actually afraid of what our cities will do to them. This is also says volume how our politicians are divided, for that they all stood together and did as the Oregon counties did in 2007 and opposed Marine Reserves, there's no way that this would be enacted by the voters. Something like this would never gotten this far years ago. I'm sure that Governor Tom McCall would have told outside groups, thanks for visiting, but don't stay. So with that, I'd also like to conclude that the fishermen I've talked to and everything else, you know, how are opposing this, there's no mitigation and everything else. And if you do want to pass this, put something in there like you got to look at something for mitigation for the fishermen because this is going to hurt their families. This is, you know, anyway. I'm going off track here, but anyway, thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Sir.
My name is Bernie Bjork. I'm third-generation Astorian, 30-plus years commercial fisherman, ex-Port of Astoria commissioner, currently on the Pacific Fisheries Management Council's Central Fish Habitat Area as a review committee, as an alternate. I'm here representing the Lower Columbia Alliance for Sustainable Fisheries, a group of 100 entities from the Lower Columbia on both sides of the river who are adamantly opposed to more closed fishing areas. And when I talk about more closed fishing areas, you just got a packet of information there, and you'll see there's two charts on the front of it. One is the Rockfish Conservation Area. It's in yellow. The chart is from Westport, Washington to Cape Falcon, where our Marine Reserve is going to be. And I was also the representative for the commercial fishermen on the Cape Falcon Review committee from Clatsop County. Anyway, on this chart is the RCA, Rockfish Conservation Area, closed from Canada all the way to Mexico, closed in the year about 2002. Off of Cannon Beach and Cape Falcon, it is approximately 30 miles wide east to west. The next page is the Central Fish Habitat Area. It was formed about 2005. And it goes from about, well, not about, 700 fathom curve out to the 200 mile limit off of Oregon, all of Oregon. And it's approximately 150 miles wide. No bottom fishing ever, for good. We have gone to meetings since 2003, representing the Lower Columbia Alliance for Sustainable Fisheries, pointing this information out, especially at the Cape Falcon Review Committee, and never was allowed to present it. Also, Cape Falcon Review Committee never allowed the fishing entities to add a no marine reserve option on the table. We had to vote for a marine reserve, some form of a marine reserve. They did not allow us to vote for no marine reserve at Cape Falcon. I'm sure that's the way it was at the other two, too. That's not a very good process. That didn't happen in Coos Bay. Coos Bay recently, for the second time in a year, said no to a marine reserve. And that was run through the port of Coos Bay in a much cleaner way. Not a stacked deck process like 3013. I'm sorry, but that's what it was. Anyway, just a couple more things here in my packet, if you have time to read them, is a letter I wrote to Senator Johnson. It does list some things that possibly we could work with, is sunset clauses, mitigation. Finally, some form of mitigation for a fisherman. Something, to make it a compromise. No more takings. Take. That's all it is. More grounds. Then Coos Bay Trawlers Association. I have a letter from them. Also, Port of Astoria, within a year, it's less than a year old. Port of Astoria backing us again. I was just at the City of Warrenton Commission meeting last night. They will send a letter backing us one more time, too. And at the very end is a letter. It's not a letter. It's the Pew Foundation. It's their own work. It's from them, showing that they have $70 million to provide jobs for people who want to put fishermen out of business and fishing communities out of business. Right here on the back page, it says this money is going to go to the destruction of the world's oceans with a particular emphasis on global fisheries. This money will be used to put fishermen out of business for no particular reason. And I'm sorry if I come across a little bit upset, but this has been going on for many years, and you have to know that fishermen are upset. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Buehr. Mr. Barnett.
Kelly Barnett, Fisherman's Advisory Committee for Tillamook, Port of Garibaldi Commissioner, and owner of the Garibaldi Cannery. I'm just going to speak on the Cape Falcon issue. It's very near and dear to my heart. I had some very deep personal bonding experiences with my father in that cove fishing, which apparently I'm not going to be able to have that opportunity with my grandkids. But I need to remind the committee that Cape Falcon was far from a consensus, and every paper on marine reserves, right near the heading of everyone, it will tell you if you do not have community buy-in for a reserve, you have a failed reserve. You will have a failed reserve at Cape Falcon. Community team vote was 9-7. The OPAC recommendation that came before OPAC was crafted by ODF&W after the community team process. It was not vetted through the community team. And anyway, it was in no way a consensus at Cape Falcon. It's opposed by the Port of Garibaldi. This bill is. It was opposed by the Fisherman's Advisory Committee for Tillamook. It was opposed by the Tillamook County Commissioners. And as Bob said, the Oregon Association of Counties was not for marine reserves. The recommendation that came out to OPAC from the Cape Falcon was not what was recommended in 3013. 3013 set a consensus, and the idea should come from the community team. The Cape Falcon process was not a consensus, and the forwarded proposal for a marine reserve and marine protected areas at Cape Falcon came after the community team process was through. And if I say any more, I'll get emotional.
Gentlemen, thank you for your testimony. Questions for this panel?
Representative, I don't know if it'd be a question, but I've been watching this since 2001 when I first got here. In fact, 3534 that changed the deck chairs for OPAC was one of my first bills where there'd be meaningful input from coastal communities. I know what happened at Port in Port Orford because it's 16 miles from my house. I was keeping track of that. That had community buy-in. It was a 6 or 7 year process. They got it done. In fact, we just had a viewing down there of the site and some things last week with Representative Roblin, and the governor was down. But the situation at Garibaldi Cape Falcon, I know for a fact that that process was manipulated by the Department of Fish and Wildlife. That's not even a question. I've talked to Director Elliker about it. Whether or not we can ever take a second look at that in some way, I don't know. We weren't successful with the bill last time. You take a look what's in this bill. You can say it's innocuous or you can say whatever it is, but I do think, and I think Representative Boone would agree, we're not done with what we're going to have to do to have proper oversight of this entire situation. We just today had a report on the territorial sea plan, the mapping that's gone on, the amount of land that they want to leave, the ocean they want to leave out there for our commercial fishermen. In some situations, might only be 35% of what's available out there. And they want to hand it over to foreign companies for the wave energy. I have never supported wave energy, and it's going to cost Oregon millions and millions and millions of dollars to take those buoys out when they fail, and they will fail. Those of us that lived on the coast, I've been there since 43, raised at Seaside, was there, saw them trying to stabilize the Columbia River buoys, couldn't do it, they still move. There's a lot that has gone on in this process that we were hoping where people would be represented, that the community teams would be representative of the area where they were set up. The further north you got, the more out of whack that got. And it kind of got away from us, I think, as legislators, because we don't directly make those appointments on those community teams. That's a different process. It kind of reminds me of land use. We've been fighting over land use since, 35 years. This isn't going to go away either. This isn't the end of it. I said a few words the other day in Port Orford, and basically what it was, I really support the concept of a marine reserve for the purpose of research. What can we learn from marine reserves that will help us better learn how to manage that ocean and take care of it and perpetuate it for our communities and the fishermen that are dependent on it? That's the only reason to have it. But in reality, all the research, everything that you need to do, you can do without a marine reserve right now by open and closed seasons, open and closed areas, open and closed species, trip limits, all kinds of combinations of things. But when the governor asked the question, I think sometime in 99, would a limited system marine reserve be beneficial to Oregon? We never answered the question. We just went right away to establishing them. And 3534 was trying to be a way to slow that down, take a better look at it. I hope that you don't look at this bill as a final say. We're going to have to do another bill in 13. I know the Coastal Caucus is going to be looking at what does that bill need to do. The three sites, I'm checking this now because I got an email the other day, the recommendation from OPAC was supposed to go to the Department of Fish and Wildlife, not the governor. And I'm checking to see which way it went. And from that, I'll know what I need to do in 14.
13, excuse me.
Thank you, Representative.
I'd just like to weigh in a little bit. So what I've heard, and thanks again for your testimony and coming all this way here today. But I agree with some of what Representative Krieger said, and I think that Bernie, you've listed some of the same things of what Bob Corning said, and Kelly about some options that when this goes forward, if it goes forward, what we need to still work on. And I think that one of the things that I've always supported, no matter what happens, is if there are any fishing grounds closed, like that, there is obligation of some sort, compensation, I mean monetary compensation. And the other thing that I would like to see is a fairly long-term research piece, because although I didn't get into full-blown oceanography or marine biology, as Arnie didn't either, but I still follow it closely, and I do believe it. The science part of me says that you need time to collect this data. You need time to research it. And those are some of the options that I see that we could put people to work gathering data. And, you know, we talked about early on in Coastal Caucus of having a marine research site associated with each marine reserve. A marine research site associated with each reserve site, so that there would be, and if you take it through Oregon State or U of O or whatever, whoever has the marine ocean programs, their interns, their scientists, their engineers would be associated with those sites and do that research. And that would be part of their, what we often get is somebody's thesis or doctorate or whatever is the research, and we gain a scientist out of that too. So I think that's important. And then a review period. And if they show that we need more time off from fishing in that area, or do need time off from fishing in that area, then that would be considered. If they don't, if things are okay, then we would make that decision there. So it would be done scientifically. And I think that you know, I heard somebody say we're not done yet, and I totally agree with that. I think this is going to be a work in progress. So,
thank you, Representative. We do have another panel.
But
please.
From the time I was on the Board of Forestry, we looked with the independent science team to give us information upon which to base policy. I am not convinced that we have anybody in the scientific community today that can look at information and do research that can keep their personal bias out of it, so that we have the actual facts upon which to make the decisions in the future of marine reserves. That is going to be one of the biggest pieces we're going to have to look with for 13. How do we guarantee that to happen down the road? Because as long as they benefit and have a full-time employment act, at the taxpayers' dollars out there, whether it be lottery dollars or what it is, you show me once that they said it was enough, it's always more.
Further questions for this panel? Seeing none, gentlemen, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Sorry,
Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if this. Thank you. I'm not sure if this is for this panel or not, but for those of us not familiar with this, at least not since the last time we heard about it, which was a year ago, the time frame I was trying to understand a little more clearly. The Section 3 indicates that ODFW may not impose prohibitions on fishing by rule until the baseline data has been collected. How long is that going to be? Does anyone know?
Representative, I believe that's probably not a question for this panel. I believe that we could probably ask the department that question if you're willing to hold on.
I'm willing to hold the question. Thank you.
Gentlemen, thank you. I'd like to call up Susan Allen and Doug Creasy, recognizing that we are putting panels together that may not always agree.
We don't always agree here.
Mr. Creasy, please.
Okay.
Just to say something about the science.
For the record, sir.
Doug Creasy, and I'm a salmon troller and crabber.
Thank you.
The federal government's baseline for the fish in the RCA that creates the RCA, a Canary rockfish, they claim a baseline from 1916. So you got to wonder how they discovered that the fish, the numbers of fish that were 1916, that that's what they go by. And I think it discredits the whole science community, because they will tell you to your face that it's 1916. And you just wonder what's going on. But I was going to talk about salmon and crab. The Columbia River produces most of the salmon for Oregon. Within the Columbia River, they catch over 500,000 salmon, 530,000 in 2010. The Oregon coast in 2010, we landed 60,000. So that kind of, you know, we're 10-12% of what was caught in the river. And we can only keep on coho fish that were fin clipped. So the government is paying money to raise that fish, and now it's saying that they want to deny us to catch that fish in this area, but then to pay more money to do science and research and enforcement. So you're kind of paying money one hand, and then you're paying more money on the other hand, and the fish is going to die by November anyway. I mean, these fish come into the coast and they go into the Columbia. So I don't know what the big deal about studying a salmon that's going to be dead in November. I want to tell you something about crab. Every $1 million of crab that get landed on the Oregon coast, $22,500 in a check is sent to the ODF&W, which is a pretty significant piece of change. Well, we land about $50 million worth of crab. So that's over $1 million a year. It's just right off the top. Do nothing. Well, when House Bill 3130 came up, that one 2 years ago, fishermen were given one boat out of eight. Yet, here we are, in this one species, we're throwing well over $1 million a year at you. It just kind of shows why we are angry, because we did not have proportional representation about the things that we do. And when they talk about conversations, I stood up in one of these meetings and I said gently about what I wanted to say, and the moderator told me to sit back down. I couldn't talk anymore. It was a very interesting conversation because it was in September of 08, and the government gal was talking about how marine reserves were so wonderful to the newspaper. Well, you know, she was trying to change that election. And I mentioned that in that committee hearing, and I was told to be quiet, and I couldn't say anything. So there's a lot of anger, and that's about all I wanted to say.
Thank you, Mr. Creasy. Ms. Allen.
Chair Bailey, Chair Gilliam, for the record, my name is Susan Allen. I'm the director of a group called Our Ocean. We're a coalition that represents about 250,000 members statewide and are endorsed by groups like the Oregon AFL-CIO and the Oregon Business Association, Alliance for Retired Americans, and others that are interested in sustainably managing Oregon's ocean. Incidentally, I also want to make certain that you know that I am a lifelong Oregonian and love to fish with my family. Some of the comments made earlier really resonated with me, in that some of the very best times that I had with my father was when he was done farming for the day, we would go fishing together. And I cherish those moments as well, and hope to have my daughter, hope to work on a process that allows my daughter to take her grandchildren fishing as well, crabbing, clamming, because we love the ocean and we love the bounty that is harvested from the ocean. I'm speaking to you today in support of Senate Bill 1510, which comes to you demonstrating great bipartisan support both in this building and in the field. I'd like to take this time to thank the good work of Chair Jeff Cruz and Senator Betsy Johnson and members of the Coastal Caucus for their attention, their time, their deliberative consideration, and their energy as they have drafted this bill and stewarded this process. If passed, Oregon will have an initial system of marine reserve sites providing greater protection for some of the most ecologically important areas in Oregon state waters. Our ocean supports the designation of these sites because they represent a suite of protections that both preserve critical habitat and promote sustainable practices like hook and line trolling and wreck and commercial crabbing. Beyond each site's size and boundaries being based on best available science, and economic data that was spatially explicit for each site, they also reflect extensive stakeholder input and difficult compromises made throughout a process that has spanned over a decade. Oregon's territorial sea is managed in the public trust, and we believe this process has developed meaningful outcomes well beyond the boundaries of the Marine Reserve proposal sites. Stakeholders from different regions and perspectives have shared deliberatively in dialogues and forged professional relationships that can only make our state stronger and better able to address other issues of mutual concern. Representative Krieger made mention of the Territorial Sea planning process, and I think that is exactly the kind of conversation where conservationists and fishermen have many things in common. Thank you for the opportunity to speak, and I would be happy to answer any questions that you have today.
Thank you, Ms. Allen. Questions for this panel? Seeing none, we thank you both for your testimony. The department care to comment on Representative Benz's question, if that is still on the table, Representative.
It is.
I don't mean to speak for you.
Chair Bailey, my name is Ed Bowles, Fish Division Administrator for Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. And Chair Bailey and Representative Bentz, I think your question referred to how we would implement the requirement to collect baseline data before prohibitions go into effect. Is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Actually, it says until the baseline data have been collected. I just wanted to know how long that was going to be.
Yes. Chair Bailey, Representative Bentz, we have examples of this in the two that have already been implemented. We will likely be about two full seasons collecting baseline information. And statistically, the strength of that study is really in tracking these reserves over time compared to other areas that don't have any prohibitions. And so the baseline complements that. So it'll be about 2 years of baseline. Then the prohibitions would go into effect, and then we'd be tracking it over time, comparing these areas with similar sites that don't have any prohibitions, and that's the strength of the study.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just so I understand this, the 2 years go by, and then the commission may or may not impose prohibitions on fishing.
Correct.
That's how I read this. Am I correct so far?
Chair Bailey, Representative Bentz, the designation and the presumption of prohibitions would go into effect at the initial rulemaking when the sites are designated, but it would state in there that they would not actually be implemented or go into effect as prohibitions until the baseline studies were complete. And that's the way we did it on the Redfish Rock and Otter Rock sites. And then because we were unable to get the baseline data done within the 2 years, we actually deferred that an additional 6 months for those two sites, and they just went into effect January 1 after 2.5 years.
Thank you. And the reports that we're going to then receive, it says, are going to be provided by a public university chosen by the technical advisory committee. And then there's a list of that which I think we're then going to see. Will that report be designed in a way then that will give us a chance to evaluate whether or not these prohibitions against fishing can or cannot be lifted? Is that one of the functions of this report? reporting process? Because I was looking at the what it was supposed to include, and I was trying to make sure that's going to be in there.
Chair Bailey and Representative Bentz, you're right. That kind of 10-year call for the question, if you will, is designated as the point entity for that would be the Science and Technical Advisory Committee to the Ocean Policy Advisory Council. And that entity could contract or tap into a university to assist with that and prepare the report. That would be based on the data and the information that Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and other cooperators would be producing each year. And so that would be rolled out. And to be honest, you will not be, as a legislative body, you will not be blind to the results of the ongoing experiment for 10 years. We will be providing updates whenever you request throughout. But as I think Representative Krieger mentioned, and Representative Boone, the sort of questions that we're asking on do these work, do these provide for a benefit ecologically, but equally important, do they result in social and economic hardship? Those sort of questions will take some time to determine, and that's the purpose of the 10 years, as I understand it.
Mr. Chair, one final follow-up. Thank you. So then the time, if I understand it correctly, that the space would be 8 years then that folks wouldn't be fishing. Is that what I'm hearing?
Or that's correct.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Co-Chair, did you have a question?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Thank you for being here, Mr. Bowles. And would you just remind the committee, particularly those of us not on the Coastal Caucus, where the prohibitions are codified? Are they in rule already? Was it part of 3013? Can you just go back over that for us a little
bit? Sure, sure. Co-Chair Gilliam, for these three sites that are contemplated as a part of this Senate bill, those are not in rule anywhere as of yet. Rulemaking for that, assuming this bill did become law, would begin after that signing and would be through a typical agency rulemaking process, which is all the public involvement and everything associated with it. The prohibitions would be centered primarily within Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife relative to the fish and wildlife aspects of these prohibitions. The actual designations of the seafloor and the water column would be through the Department of Lands and the Land Board in a parallel process. And then Parks Commission also has a minor role in that they regulate some of the seaweed aspects of this.
That's helpful. I have a follow-up if I could, Mr. Co-Chair. So clearly prohibitions are expected, but those are not drafted, if you will. Those are not anticipated because you don't have the kind of baseline data that this bill is calling for. Is that fair or is that not correct?
Chair Bailey and Co-Chair Gilliam, the actual designation of these and their and establishing when the prohibitions or what the prohibitions would look like are part of the package that is this bill. The actual boundaries and the allowances are explicit within this bill based on what came out of the OPAC recommendations that came to us, and then we forwarded on to the legislature last January. So those are actually very well lined out, and were a very long process. So the substance of those are not going to change as we embark on a public process to adopt rules through each of the rulemaking. I cannot judge where that will end up, but I am assuming that it would be consistent with the statute. But there is a process for that, and there are nuances within that that will be taken into account. But it will be, I'm assuming, consistent with statutory mandate.
A final and a follow-up, Mr. Co-Chair. Help me understand as we move forward in the data gathering, and I do defer to Speaker Roblin and to my colleague here on my left from the scientific understanding of this, and to your staff. As you're gathering that data, you're saying there will be, in the rulemaking process, obviously you always have a public portion of that. To what extent would our fishing community, the people that actually are out fishing, to what extent would they have input or actually be helpful to you in data gathering? Or is this a completely separate enterprise?
Sure, sure. Chair Bailey and Co-Chair Gilliam, the actual implementation of this research, and I think Representative Krieger put a real point on this, these are not being implemented in Oregon as a management tool at this point. And this gets at Mr. Bjork's comment that these aren't designed to enhance fisheries per se. These are designed to be the smallest footprint possible to actually do a study to determine if this tool is effective for Oregon, and that's why the call for the question that you heard from Representative Bentz in 10 years. So in order to implement that research, we'll be doing a little bit of baseline study before the prohibitions, and then we'll be tracking it for a minimum 8 years after the prohibitions. And all throughout that, it's actually a component of the bill to accentuate use of the local fleets to help with the research. So that is a key piece of this. It is already evident for Redfish Rocks, where we're already chartering much of the budget that we received going directly to the fleet to help with the research. And we want to expand that also to include, for example, urchin divers, where we can, as we get them trained up scientifically. Right now we don't have a dive program, and so we will rely on professional divers, hopefully actual commercial fisherman divers.
That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for the department? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Bowles. Is Ms. Allen still in the room? We have an additional question. Would you mind coming forward, please? Thank you, Ms. Allen. I'm sorry that we didn't get the question out while you were already up the dais. If you don't mind, say your name for the record again.
My pleasure. For the record, my name is Susan Allen. I'm the director of Our Ocean.
Thank you. Representative Boone.
And Susan, I apologize for not asking when you were up just before, but when Senator Johnson was laying out her testimony, she mentioned that this bill was brought forward with one of the biggest pushes in being to avoid an initiative.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is your group planning on running an initiative anyway, or can you give us your word that because we're doing this bill and if it should go through and everything, you will not do an initiative?
So in this legislative discussion of this legislative concept, Senate Bill 1510, this is yet another illustration of how our coalition has been structured. We've hired a lobbyist. We hired somebody who spent 10 years in the legislative process, 9.5 years in the legislative process, to work constructively in the process by learning from the experiential ocean users about the ocean while helping to participate and constructively inform all of the citizen processes that were laid out in the executive order through each of the legislative sessions that we've been here to express our points of view and help inform the outcomes. Whether it's on the community team level or here, we've tried to really walk the walk and create the kind of regional buy-in that will create areas where we can learn, but all of us can learn from these areas. So our intention in supporting this bill is to put it in the words of a very well-known Lincoln County commissioner. Our intention is to make these marine reserve sites the best in the world. So our intention is to continue to partner with the people that we've befriended and learned more of, our friends and colleagues in the fishing community, to leverage the NOAA field station and leverage all the scientific research so that we can create opportunities for the fleet to opt into scientific research and make our territorial sea an economic generator that is not just about harvest, but also might bring more scientific research jobs and more jobs in education, really leveraging the community colleges. Our intention with this bill is to make Oregon's initial system of marine reserves the best we can make it.
Follow up.
Can you give us your word that you either are or are not going to run an initiative if this bill goes through?
We have no plans at this time to run an initiative.
Thank you, Ms. Allen. Mm-hmm. Seeing no further testimony, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1510, and the committee will stand at ease. Thank you, and we are back. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1510, and I would entertain a motion.
Give me a moment, Mr. Co-Chair. Co-Chair Bailey, I move Senate Bill 1510 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Gilliam moves Senate Bill 1510 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Representative Krieger.
You've heard it said before, it ain't over. This is a place in between until we get to 13. Some things have come up that the Coastal Caucus is aware of. There's been some discussions. I think there'll be an opportunity to make some, I wouldn't call them corrections, but maybe to better define what's expected from these sites. And I'm very concerned about how we can have a lot of confidence in the science that comes out of it, that they don't perpetuate themselves for either the environmental community only or for the science community to have a full-time job. They actually need to be producing something for the commercial fishing industry by better understanding how to manage the ocean and take care of it.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Co-Chair Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I don't want to make this any longer than it has to be, but I really do think it needs to be said on the record that in a session where we all, and I mean all of us, both sides of the aisle, are focused and trying to put people back to work, it's disturbing to hear constituents of my colleagues come and tell us how afraid they are and how hard this is going to be taking these actions on their livelihood. I don't know of another group of legislators who have spent more time and are more unified for their area than the Coastal Caucus, and that has a huge bearing on what I think and how I look at these issues. And I say that looking at three of them right here on our panel, Mr. Co-Chair. And I respect them very much. I know that their pain is much greater than mine as they've gone through this. I did not enjoy this in our last session. I will take the department at their word that they will continue to work on this and invite that community into how we move forward. And I think, not only hope that Representative Krieger's comments are right. They have to be. This cannot be over just the way that we're leaving it here. So, with a great deal of trepidation, I will be voting aye. But this is a very difficult decision to make, and I am trusting particularly our Coastal Caucus, and I appreciate the work that they've done and what they've gone through.
Representative Boone.
Thank you. And I second some of your comments. Of course, I can't second them all because they're yours. But I wasn't present at the meeting with the governor when the fishermen came and everybody had that meeting. But I did see the order, and it did mention the economic, potential economic problem that this could cause, and that his intention was that that not happen, and that he would utilize fishing boats and fishermen and women to help with the process and all the pieces and parts of the projects to get the information to do this with little or no, and I don't recall the exact words, impacts and stuff. But it would be my wish that we would use, and I know, Ed, you've said that, and we know we can hold you to that and believe you, right? That when fishermen or women are needed to collect things or go out and do things or whatever, just like we've been talking in the ocean energy discussions, that our fishing fleets will be used to get these data, to get these pieces of information we need. And it is my intention, if and I don't know when it would be, next session, obviously not this one, if there is to be some sort of compensation for any lost revenue. And how do you do that? I don't know, because fishing is fishing. Sometimes you get some, sometimes you don't. But the point is that if there's sticking to the executive order and keeping whole that statement and the intent of the governor to do that, so that our people, my constituents and almost last and future constituents, and that they will not, if they take their living from fishing and it's interrupted in that sense, that we either make it up to them by hiring them to help do the work on this process as we go forward, and or give them a compensation for what they've lost. And I think that I just can't imagine anybody being objecting to that. So that's my wish, and I intend to continue working on it in any way I can to help make this a win-win for all.
Thank you, Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to join Co-Chair Gilliam in his reference to those who are from the coast. And it's of great interest to me, since I am, of course, the furthest from the coast, living in Ontario,
East
Coast of Oregon, the parallels between this situation and the wolves, which we'll be talking about tomorrow on the floor of the House, is enormously interesting. And what we have is a large group of Oregonians in this valley who choose to impose their will upon those of us out in the more remote areas. They do so, in my case, by suggesting and forcing the implementation and reintroduction of wolves. And we do so in this committee today by forcing the opinions of those on the fishermen and women on the coast. But you know what? We're one state, and we have to get along. And so the process that has been explained and is reflected in this bill is how we do that. And so, to me, looking at my Coastal Caucus members is the proper thing to do, because you are local, and I think that's where we have to start. And then, because we're one state, we look at the process that incorporates all of our concepts and thoughts and disparate approaches to these kinds of situations. So with that lengthy explanation, I'll be voting for the bill, because I'll be following those who are local, and I'll hope that this process protects the fishermen and women along the coast. It is hugely important that the majority recognize the damage to the minority. I join my colleague Representative Boone in her hope that that to the extent that we can, we hold those local folks harmless from the damage that what the majority wants to do will wreak upon them. Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Chair.
Thank you for those comments. Representative Thompson.
I may as well throw my two bits in. I don't share your enthusiasm on this at all. I think this is poorly planned. It's politically motivated, and we're going to see some very bad science come out of this. And over the next 10 years, we're going to see the demise of the coastal fishing fleet. Fishing fleets are working entities. They can't sit in port waiting for the governor to call because he needs a boat ride out to a spot in the ocean. We have regulatory mechanisms in place to protect fish catches. We regulate carefully the amount of fish caught. If we're not doing that properly, then maybe we better start doing it properly. I don't see anything to be gained by what we have in play right now except the destruction of the coastal economy. I'll be voting no.
Thank you, Representative. Seeing no further discussion, Sue, will you please call the roll?
Representative Bentz.
Aye.
Representative Kenny Geyer.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
No.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone.
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Co-Chair Bailey.
Aye.
Co-Chair Gilliam.
Aye.
Motion passes. Senate Bill 1510 is sent to the floor. We will have Representative Krieger, Representative Witt, would you be willing to co-carry?
Yep. Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. We will have co-carriers on the floor. I will close the work session on Senate Bill 1510, and the committee is adjourned.